You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anger, the Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits and Molecular UK. I am Mark Heath. I'm back, but I don't bring, I'm afraid, friends, very good news, because as Paula Abdul famously sang, as I'm sure you'll know, Stu, two steps forward, one step back. And that's exactly what we had at the weekend as Ipswich Town went and lost to the previously rather feeble Foxes of Leicester City 3-1, thoroughly underwhelming. Particularly annoying in my household, as I live with a Leicester fan, and she was just as shocked as I think most Leicester fans were that Leicester won in such fairly comfortable fashion. Stu, how are you this morning? It's just the two of us today.
I'm fine, thank you. I'm not au fait with that Paula Abdul number. Can you give us a little
two steps tune? Forward, one step back, opposites attract. I mean, I think it was probably the late 80s, once again proving how cool and relevant we are. But yeah, it just fits perfectly with what happened, obviously, yeah. Given the two steps forward and literally then the one step back at Leicester. Just the two of us today, Stu, because Ross's computer's blown up, so we've got no idea when we may see him again. And Alex is off for a day, I think spending the whole day congratulating himself for the work that he's put in thus far. Stu, before we get into the game, has Christmas officially hit the Watson household? Are you deep into the confectionery, the Christmas snacks, etc.? Or do you try and put that off until closer to the day?
I've been, very disciplined. I've had Neil Warnock in my ear regarding snacks and confectionery. There is a Christmas cupboard starting to fill, but yep. I've not fired the starter gun on that just yet. Get in there with the presents. Bit of wrapping's already started. Tree's long been up, I think I said to you, first weekend in December, that one up. It might have even been the last one in November when we're having that debate. Looking forward to it.
We've got one of our Christmas things is that we stockpile crisps. I'm a big crisp lover. I think I've mentioned on this show. Indeed, obviously, we got sent numerous packets of crisps back in the day from our friend Daryl over in the States. The Christmas bag of crisps, huge bag of crisps. Every time I go into the garage, I'm looking at it's calling to me, Stu, and I'm thinking, when can I get into that? But the key is, when you reach our age, Stu, of course, metabolism slows down. You have to be responsible and disciplined, don't you? Just as you say, as Warnock would say, before you get right into those Christmas snacks.
Once you've started,
that's it.
It's like the Pringles catchphrase, isn't it? Once you've started, there's no going back, and all bets are off. So you can't go too early.
Exactly. And just a little insight into Rossi. Friends, we get a Christmas hamper sent to us. It's one of the few perks of working for the company that we do. Every year they send out a Christmas hamper to all the employees, which is, you know, a good value, lots of quality clobber in there. Ross's always seems to end up either not finding him or coming late. So again, it came late this year, and literally within a second, I think, of it arriving, he sent us a picture of him with a biscuit in his mouth. He has no restraint when it comes to getting stuck into that Christmas clobber.
He complained that it hadn't been sent to him, and then he turned out one of his neighbours pointed out it'd been bit behind his bins for about 3 days.
Classic. All right, shoot, we can afford
good old Roscoe.
Classic Rossi. Hopefully he'll reappear before Christmas with his computer fixed, but time will tell. He's got a chat with a specialist unit about it this morning, Stu, which sounds quite official and scary. Anyway, Stu, we can put it off no longer. Let's talk about Ipswich Town losing at Leicester City, because it was not what I expected. I'll be honest. It was not what my wife expected. A Leicester fan, she thought they'd get crushed And, you know, to be honest, looking at it on paper, it looked like a good game for Town to go and win, given the problems they've had, the toxic nature of what's going on down there, particularly in front of their home fans at the King Power. But they didn't, Stu. So do you want to kick us off with your opening thoughts and then we can hear from Kieran?
Frustrating. Wouldn't put it in quite the same bracket as the Blackburn. Shambles, unacceptable, etc. But it certainly can be lumped in with several games this season that were wholly unconvincing, uninspiring, of that nature. We keep saying it, goals change games. Leicester get a couple of very good ones, of course. They didn't really start playing until they got a goal back. It was just that added to the frustration that, you know, they didn't really show a great deal of anything until those final 20 minutes when really the game was done by that point. So frustrating way to end off a week full of positives up until that point.
Two steps forward, one step back. Let's hear from Kieran McKenna, shall we?
Yeah, I thought it wasn't a great performance, certainly. I think the goals were the decisive thing in a game, really. I think you can see the strike like that from 30 yards, 7 minutes into the game, away from home against a good team. It's always going to be tough. So they had a small bit of momentum after that. But in general, we kind of got ourselves back into it and we're growing into the game. Had a really good chance to go 1-1. There's a couple of moments from set players, but nothing really in open play. So nothing really in the game. And then they score an incredible goal right on half-time. That again, we've not done loads wrong in the situation. It's just an incredible bit of individual brilliance that you have to give credit for. So, yeah, I felt like that was really, not to shorten the story, but that was to the decisive moments of the game. At half-time, you know it's going to be tough, but you still know you can get back into the game. But also Leicester at home with the confidence of two incredible goals like that are a really good side. So we're disappointed with the third goal, you know, maybe more, definitely more than the other two, to be honest, just after half time where I think we're expecting it to be a free kick and then we switch off in the box. So from there, it's really, really tough. And it wasn't our day. We got our goal back out of not very much as well, to be honest. Then we have chance to go 3-2, a couple of chances to go 3-2. Again, if you score one of them, then maybe you can get something out of the game. But yeah, I think it was a game of moments and not many of moments went our way, and they've grabbed a couple of incredible moments.
All right, Stu, we'll return to the incredible moments and not a lot we can do about it debate in due course. But shall we start at the start, the starting 11, Stu? You were off on Friday, so I did the starting 11 bit. Two changes, what I predicted. Two changes, what happened. I had Casey McAteer, however, coming in for Sindre Vollet-Aghele. I did not have Jack Clark playing, again, out of position on the right, something we've seen earlier this season. I think everyone agrees that it doesn't really work. So was that a surprise for you?
Yes and no. When I recorded the pre-pod with Ross last week, when we had an early look ahead to that game, off the fly, I did think that Aghele, I mean, we didn't know he was ill, which was the reason he dropped out. But regardless, I thought he might have been one that was dipped out for this game, having been a little bit quieter against Stoke and 19 still finding his feet, etc. The first thought was that Casey McAteer, if you remember the whole game, Kieran McKenna really sort of went out of his way to praise Casey McAteer's outstanding defensive contribution in that game. And I wondered whether, you know, an away game against attacking opposition at the end of a busy schedule would be suited for him. But the closer we got to the game, and my first goal scorer pick will back this up, I did wonder whether Jack Clark might try the Jack Clark on the right experiment again, because I thought, you know, we've been saying how well Jaden Philogene had played in the Coventry and Stoke games with, you know, his all-round contribution.
Yeah.
So I thought the temptation would be to go with him again. And Jack Clark's been playing off the right a little bit off the bench recently when he's been shuffling it in the second half. And Casey McAteer's not even really been getting those minutes off the bench, which I think unfortunately speaks volumes of kind of where he's at the moment. So, yeah, a little bit surprised by Jack Clark, but not massively shocked. And I just had an inkling that he would that he might start on the right, and I chucked him in as first goal scorer pick on that basis. And yeah, I don't know. What did you think of the return of the Philogene and Clark in the same side experiment?
Well, as I say, I think we've been there before, haven't we? I guess the problem is, as we've said quite often, is that they're two of Town's most informed players, best players so far this season, and they both play the same position. And you can't really drop Philogene after what he's been doing and bring Clark. I mean, you could do. To me, I thought it would make sense, given that Casey McAteer has been underwhelming so far. If there's ever going to be a game where he's going to feel comfortable and motivated, it would surely be this one, where he's going back in a very familiar environment, playing at the King Power with everything that he's known and been around for years. And then obviously he's motivated to go out and do a job against the team that he grew up playing for. Well, I thought, from my point of view, that seemed like a good opportunity to maybe get him a good game and get him going.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would have been probably the more pragmatic route in this game, to play McAteer as that sort of almost as a wing back, mindful of the threat of Mavididi down that left hand side for Leicester, and then have Clark off the bench. The Clark's contribution late on against Stoke, if you remember, he came on the right and he created two really good chances playing down that right hand side, and maybe that was just in the back of Kieran McKenna's mind, and maybe he was thinking Leicester having a bit of a wobble this season, home crowd could be turned, attack is the best form of defence, and that's why he went with the options that he did. He tried it a bit in pre-season, he tried it in the early stages of the season, he came to the conclusion that the balance of the attack wasn't quite right with those two. I don't think there was anywhere near enough in this game to change that opinion. I'm not sure it's something we're going to see loads of more going forwards, to be honest.
Yeah, let's hope not. Just on the general, I guess, clearly, you know, rotation and all that has been a massive debate and narrative. This is kind of the opposite, isn't it? Because then people are saying, well, you know, it was a game too far and there should have been more changes, tired players, etc. Is that, in terms of your feeling about the game, is that something that you would entertain as a one of the causing factors of defeat, that players were just maybe a bit too leggy and didn't have the energy after three games in a week?
Possibly. Like you say, damned if you do, damned if you don't. We've had a week of people saying, stick with a team. We've found a team now. We've just beat Coventry 3-0. Please don't change it from there. And he doesn't. It's just the one enforced change for Stoke. This is a little bit different because it's a tighter turnaround. It's Wednesday to Saturday. It's away from home. It's at the right back end of a really busy block. I was actually surprised it wasn't more than two changes. I thought there might be a little bit more freshening up. I think the players that were probably at the very top end of the fatigue scale would have been Philogene, Nunez, Taylor. They're the ones that have kind of played the majority of the minutes and played the sort of the high intensity minutes as well in the previous games. But again, I've said it already, bit of a cliche, goals change games. We'll never know how this game would have panned out had the goals not gone in at the times they did, in the fashion that they did. It's the same for everyone, isn't it? Leicester have, you know, they would have won fewer game in this period because the Blackburn won. But in general, everyone's playing lots of games at the moment. So it's the same for everyone. So I don't really want to lean too heavily on the fatigue side of things for this performance.
Fair enough. Should we get into the goals then, Stu? You say goals change games, and Leicester scored a couple of crackers in this one. We've already heard Kieran McKenna referring to his incredible moments that we can't really do anything about. But I know from reading your observations, you don't necessarily agree with that. Deco David Reed, brilliant goal, clearly. And then Fatawu scores what I would expect to be the goal of the season. What are your thoughts on those, and in terms of what Town could they have done anything to prevent them?
I guess all goals are preventable in some way, shape or form. Depends how far back you want to go in the move, and how much you want to nitpick. My feeling at the time, and I wrote this post-match, is no, I don't agree with that. There's plenty more Ipswich could have done to prevent both those goals. The first one, Nunez kind of gets knocked off the ball. Ipswich had a decent spell of possession leading up to that first goal and was just starting to feel their way into the game, I felt. And As I say, Nunez kind of got tackled high up the pitch. Still plenty of work for Leicester to do. Then you get to the fast forward to the last bit of it. Could Nunez and Clark done better to close down the pass that led to it? Possibly. Can Matisse would get out to the shot a bit faster? Maybe. But I am probably nitpicking, to be fair, with that one. Ultimately, it's a 30-yard strike, and you know, it's a good strike. It moves in the air. I'm not putting too much blame at the feet of Christian Walton for that one. I don't want to be too strong on that goal. I thought it was, you know, it is a great strike, to be fair.
It is indeed. And before we get to the Fatu goal, then Town have a period of pressure, Stu. And I guess this is kind of the crux of the game and the issue that we've talked about quite a lot this season in terms of being ruthless in front of goal, which still sounds odd saying they need to be more ruthless when they have scored a lot of goals. But clearly there's a big moment in this one where Jack Clark, the aforementioned Jack Clark, has a huge opportunity, shoots straight at the keeper. Clearly you'd expect him to do better with that.
Yeah. Lots of games this season. I think we talked about it at Ipswich, are top of the unwanted table of big missed chances this season. This one adds to it. Say Leicester tails were up after they scored, but Ipswich rode that out a little bit. And then that chance sort of came out of nowhere, really. 37th minute. Nunez, good work down the left side of the box. Picks him out. He's not far off the penalty spot, unmarked. First time shot. One of those either side of the goalkeeper, it's probably a goal, but he sticks it straight down the throat of the goalkeeper. And again, we'll never know what would have happened there, because what I will say, and when I've talked about missed opportunity quite a bit here, and your better half Liz had sort of had the fear going into this one, and that's because all is not hunky-dory at Leicester at the moment, and you could feel it in the air. It felt like a crowd that were wanting to turn, that were waiting for it to go wrong. Even as goals two and three went in, the atmosphere never really took off. It was a world away from the last trip to the King Power back in May, when it was Jamie Vardy's big send-off and everything's kind of buoyant around that. And if Ipswich had scored that goal, you know, leading to half-time, I honestly think that it could have been a completely different story. So that is a huge moment in the game. And a lot of matches have had these big moments in them, haven't they, with Ipswich, which is profligacy coming back to cost them.
Yeah, that's what I expected, if I'm honest, Stu, given that, you know, I know clearly I live with a Leicester fan. I know how unsure and unhappy and potentially toxic the fan base are, especially at the King Power, when they've not played very well this season. I know a lot of fans haven't even been going to games. So I thought if Town could, you know, start fast and get the fans kind of again jittery and on the back of their own team, I thought that's what would happen in this game. Clearly it didn't. And the home fans then got to see what I would expect to be goal of the season, Stu, from Abdul Fatah. We know going in that he's their best player. He is a fantastic player. I mean, him and Mabadidi are great, but I think Fatah has the edge as a player. And it's just a brilliant bit of skill, to kind of see the opportunity, and then B, to convert it, Stu, because even though he sees Walton off his line, it's still a tremendous distance he's got to cover, and he's got to weight the shot perfectly so it bounces into the net. And Cifuentes afterwards says that's something that he practices. He does it all the time in training, and he's actually hit the bar already this season against Swansea with a similar effort. So your thoughts on this one, and then I guess as well prepared as we know Ipswich Town are, is there any argument that Christian Walton should have been a bit more wary of that, especially having seen the fact he's tried it and almost converted already this season?
I needed to go back and look at it regarding Walton. Whenever a goalkeeper's beaten from 70 yards out, you think the first thought is it's the goalkeeper's mistake. He kind of never really gets the flight of the ball while it's going through the air, does he? And I think, you know, there's movement on the ball as well. If you watch Walton, he sort of twists and turns a little bit as he's backpedalling. But his starting position isn't actually that high. He's only just outside of his own box. It's not like he's halfway into the half or anything like that. So I actually think that the bit that Ipswich need to look at more is the bit earlier than that. And it's Ipswich in the final third. Dara O'Shea's a bit loose with a crossfield pass. So that's the first bit. And not for the first time this season. This was an Ipswich performance full of kind of unforced errors, players giving the ball away. And that was another example of that. And then can Ipswich then do better to rectify that mistake? Fatawu does skip past both Philogene and Jack Taylor before he gets his shot away. I think maybe that's something that they need to look at as well. But regarding Walton, yeah, I'm no goalkeeping expert, but I would imagine that his starting position is what most goalkeepers take up in those scenarios in games. And I think this is one you just have to applaud the strike, because that's incredible technique. You know, that was proper David Beckham versus Wimbledon territory, that, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, actually, I think it's further out than Beckham's.
70 yards they've clocked it out, I think.
Yeah. Where do you stand on that sort of goal? I mean, I've referred to it as being probably goal of the season. And I mentioned that yesterday on social media, and someone came at me, George from BSE, I think it was, saying he's got an open goal, he's got to hit it. I'd much rather have a Tony Yeboah style, you know, thunderbastard smacking the roof of the bar and you know, violently cannoning into the net. Any thoughts on that, Stu? Do you think these kind of long range efforts aren't as good a goals as maybe others?
Everyone's entitled to enjoy different goals, and I can understand sort of the aesthetics of different types of. Some people love team goals. Some people love thunderous strikes. Whatever it may be. What I would say, was it George? You said that.
George, yeah.
Yeah. George, I'll stick you 70 yards from goal with an open net, and I'll give you 100 attempts to try that shot, and I'll see how many of them you put in. It's
that's just
George.
It,
you may be an incredible athlete, but that is I think I might struggle to reach the goal most of the time trying to do that. It's
that's just it. If you remove all the kind of other factors he has to worry about, like the players around him, where Walton is, how hard he's got to hit the shot, the fact it's in a live environment, and just try and do that from there on your own, you'd struggle, I think, generally speaking, to hit the back of the net. So to do it in a game, I think it's sensational.
Yeah, we watch, remember on Soccer AM back in the day where they did the crossbar challenge, and the amount of these were, you know, elite pro athletes, and the amount of those that would skew a shot, you know, wide with efforts like that. It's an incredible bit of skill. Let's not take anything away from that.
Absolutely. And then obviously, Stu, shortly after halftime, it's pretty much game over. That man Fatawu involved again. I enjoyed that. I don't know, it's not a term I've seen before, Stu, but you referred to him flip-flapping Leif Davis. What's that all about?
Yeah, is that the term? I'm now questioning whether that's where you kind of go to move the ball one way and then very quickly sort of flick it the other. Is it, you know, it's like Ronaldinho used to do? Yeah. Elastico, is that the same thing? He does that sort of bit of skill. It's just 1v1 wing play. One of probably, if not the best winger in the league, taking on Leif Davis, who just gets beaten by a bit of skill, sends him stumbling. Don't think there's any question of a foul in there for me. Bit of misfortune with the way the ball then kind of hits Leif on his way down and falls nicely for Pereira to pick out Ayew. But again, if you roll it back, I think less than a minute earlier, Leif Davis has won a free kick in the left back area. And he takes it quickly, plays it back to Walton. They get themselves in a bit of a muddle, and Kipre sort of ends up sort of looping a square ball across his own box, which was a bit of a, you know, watching through your fingers moment. And, you know, Leicester from there recycle it and end up scoring the goal. And that's probably the most frustrating one of them all, because even at 2-0 down, I thought there was something in this game for Ipswich. I've mentioned the crowd. I've mentioned if that next goal, the old cliche of 2-0 being a dangerous scoreline, would have really held weight in this game. Because I think if Ipswich had got the next goal in the game and got it to 2-1, it would have been really interesting. And as it was, they did go and get another goal and it did become semi-interesting. But, you know, once it got to a 3-goal margin, effectively that was done, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Jens gets obviously the... the consolation, literally handed to him on a plate. So he gets the goal, which I guess is good to see. I was interested to see Matasiwa were taken off after the hour. Is that, do you reckon that's just because essentially the game's gone? They're trying to prevent him from getting another booking, because you end up with a midfield pairing of Ashley Young and Jens Kuster, which is not what you'd expect.
Yeah, remiss of me not to ask about that post-match, actually, in terms of Azor's substitution. But he did take a bit of a heavy kick a few moments earlier, so it might have been precautionary around that. There might have been the thought of him being one booking away and 3-0 down. It's a bit of a silly moment for him to go and get that booking in this game. So it might have been due to that. But, ultimately we end up with, for a small period in the game, Ashley Young and Jens Kuster in midfield, because a tired Jack Taylor had also been withdrawn at that stage, as or off. That's not a central midfield pairing that we thought we'd ever see. I thought Young did all right, actually, when he was in there for a period. And then eventually Furlong came on, and they had a bit of Furlong went off and Young went to right back, and there was a bit of a reshuffle, but that was that.
Before we move on and talk about the bigger picture, which I think is the more interesting stuff anyway, in terms of players and the way they perform in this game, is there anyone who's kind of emerging with a bit more credit than others, Stu? I know, I think AJ gave Furlong man of the match. I see there's a guy who does player ratings, ITFC data, I think it is, on Twitter after every game, where he uses a heat map and stats and that kind of thing. He had key praise as the man of the match, quite a clear man of the match. Is there anyone that you think is worthy of highlighting? Or
thought a very small positive to take from it was Sami Smodics. Lively appearance off the bench. He looks like someone that's raring to go again to me after another frustrating injury setback in what's been a real stop-start calendar year for him. You see his reaction to the goal against Stoke. Who was the goal scorer against Stoke? Remind me.
Philogene, wasn't it? No, Igeli.
Yeah. Okay. Losing my mind now. What's the
Stoke was 1-0.
Yeah. Who did he come off? He came on Coventry, didn't he?
Azon scored.
Azon, sorry, yeah. So he makes his injury comeback very late on, 89th minute, and it's the Azon goal is the one I'm thinking of. And if you have a look, Smodics doesn't immediately run over to the celebrations, because the attempted Azon pass was heading to him before it came back to Azon, and I think he was frustrated that he didn't get his name on the score sheet there. And then I watched him in the warm-up ahead of this game, and he was the last one in, and he was, really sort of practicing with real intensity, I thought. And he just looks like someone that's ready to make up for a bit of lost time. And he comes on in this game and ran around and looked quite lively and gave a bit of spark. So, a slight positive to take from a disappointing afternoon.
It was Philogene, of course, who scored against Stoke.
Of course it was.
It's just all these games kind of blend into one, don't they?
Obviously. I mean, Coventry's what, only just over a week ago, and it already feels like a lifetime ago already, doesn't it?
Where are we with Sam or Sammy? Because I've noted in some quarters he's now being called Sam. Is he officially switched to the shorter version, Stu? Is he still Sammy? Is it just a free-for-all, whatever you feel like?
Don't know. I don't know if there's been an official renaming there.
Absolutely. We need to get the official ruling on that. All right, Stu. So 3-1 defeat. Once again, we find ourselves back here in the glass half full, glass half empty, bigger picture chat. I think looking at it, and I've just been editing Carl Fuller's column for tomorrow, he makes a point in which he says that if you'd have taken 6 points from these three games, you'd have been pretty happy with that. Point average. Had they lost to Coventry, for example, and then beaten Stoke and Leicester, we'd be sitting there going, yeah, pretty decent return. So it's just, again, the manner of the fact they've got two really good wins and they've gone and laid an egg at Leicester and turned in another unconvincing performance, which immediately then dampens the mood. So where are you, Stu, in the old glass half full, glass half empty, various other chats debate?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point in terms of the points tally from the week. I think it just, yeah, it feeds into this frustration around inconsistency, doesn't it? And it's not just about the points tally, because if you have a look at it, if you extend that to the seven games in 22 days, it's 3 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats, which is not a terrible points tally. It's 11 points from 7 games, which is 3 below that 2 points a game average. This one, for me, going and losing at Leicester in a game that was changed by some fantastic strikes at the end of a really busy period isn't going to be what makes or breaks this season for Ipswich. It's going to be Oxford, Blackburn, Charlton, Derby, Wrexham, Watford, those games that have kind of slid by for varying reasons. They're all in the bottom half, those teams, by the way. Ipswich got 4 points from those matches. So, yeah, I think the bigger picture debate is that win, lose or draw this season, in general, we're still waiting to be fully convinced, aren't we? And that this is another performance that feeds into that. I don't know how to feel right now. I've said it a few times this season. I've normally got a bit of a gut feeling, or I can say with sort of confidence that, you know, don't worry, it's going to be all right. I've seen enough to know that it's going to be fine. Or actually, I'm a little bit worried that I'm seeing a trend here. I genuinely don't know, Mark, and we're nearly half a season in at the moment, and I don't know if this team is going to kick on. We were talking before this pod started. I think I said in a previous pod that, you know, we keep saying when they hit top gear, maybe there isn't a top gear. And maybe that's all right. Maybe this is about embracing the grind this season, and it's going to be this way, as it has been, from here to the end of the season. And they end up, and if it is, they end up probably around 80 something points and in the playoffs, and then who knows what happens. If I was a betting man, I'd probably be putting my pound on that being the case at the moment. They're not looking like a top two team at the moment, are they?
No, but I think that really resonates with me, Stu, what you said there about the, you know, we're always using this term, when's it going to click? When's it going to be liftoff? When's it going to be top? Maybe it's just not, you know, and we've kind of been spoiled, haven't we, by what's happened, you know, particularly those 2 seasons where they were extraordinary. But that is, you know, in terms of that kind of thing happening, that's the outlier. That's that kind of thing is not going to happen again, realistically. It's never going to be that good again. We're never going to have that feeling again. And right now, Ipswich Town are 5th in the table without really playing that well in what looks like a fairly average league.
Yeah.
And is that okay? I mean, they're going to more than likely be at least in the playoffs. Now, you can then argue, well, they've spent loads of money and this, that and the other. And obviously, expectations are much higher than they were. But surely we want a team that's competitive more than anything else and is likely to be involved in, you know, the sharp end of the season. So have we just been spoiled by what's happened and now we're expecting nothing else other than a tremendous season where they barely lose and go up is kind of seen as not good enough now? And that's, generally speaking, that doesn't really happen in football that often.
No, I mean, I had a look at it. This was an opportunity again to win 3 games in a row that slides by. They still haven't done that since that night against Southampton at the back end of the promotion season. Kieran McKenna says it's difficult to win games consecutively in this division. I had a look through it. I think Ipswich are the only team in the top 7 that haven't won at least 3 in a row or more this season. So it can be done, and Ipswich should be in a position to do it with the squad that they've put together and the money they've spent. I mean, I talked about it. It's 5 defeats now this season, which is 1 fewer than the entirety of that promotion season. And it feels like we're destined to never quite escape comparisons to that year. And this is the big problem where you talk about, have we been spoiled? Yes, because, and I felt this from very early on in this season, nothing is going to really top that in terms of it being the perfect storm of a decade or so of of apathy and pain and nothingness, and then it all coming together in the way it did, and the style of football and underdogs and
the players,
yeah. And but that's what's kind of against Ipswich at the moment. The fan base are always going to compare that, and it's a fair comparison because people say we could have kept that, we could have still had that this season. Could we have done more to keep Morsi, Chaplin, Wolfie, Burgess, etc.? And might it have been different had that been the case? We'll never know. I'm not sure it's particularly healthy to keep looking back on that. We are where we are. I thought, I got a feeling after Stoke that there was a bit more of a bond strengthening between the fans and this team. But it's never quite getting there at the moment, is it? It feels like that's another little step back, as you say, at the weekend. So, yeah, an interesting time. I said I'm sort of closer to 16th place Derby in the table than they are to second place Middlesbrough at the moment. I mean, it's a mad congested Championship table, 8 points separating third and 16th at the moment. I don't know, Mark. What's your gut feeling? Which way do you feel it's heading?
I personally think they'll be okay. I mean, you know, they're almost kind of in fifth by default at the moment. They've not been great.
But what is okay?
Well, I think they'll be at least in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I agree. Top two, maybe getting away from them. But if you just said they're going to be in the playoffs, they're going to be with a chance of going up. That's what we want from the season, isn't it? We can't. I know you can look at it on paper and go, well, they spent more money than anyone else, and therefore they should be 30 points clear at the top of the table. It doesn't work like that. That's not the way football works. You have to build a team, and that's what they're still in the process of doing. It reminds me a little bit, actually, Stu, of the League One promotion season, where, again, there were obviously high expectations. There was a big money side for that level, and that for much of that season, they kind of were stop-start, weren't they? And we obviously then recorded that podcast after the Bristol Rovers thing where we literally said, are they good enough? And we wheeled off a lot of the problems which we've been talking about now, the rotation, style of play, predictability, all that kind of stuff. And then obviously they went on that ridiculous unbeaten run and got themselves promoted. So it feels to me a little bit like maybe that sort of season where when they finally, if they do finally gel or click, whatever you want to call it, it might be, you know, a couple of months down the line and then they go on a bit of a tear. But I think generally speaking, they are in the mix for promotion in what is a fairly average league. So I'm inclined to think
the League One comparison is a really interesting and a good one, I think, with that promotion season, because yeah, the pressure was on for Ipswich to get promoted that year, and that 0-0 at Bristol Rovers on Valentine's Day, wasn't it, with Morsi going over to the fans and confronting them afterwards, and it was like all the scars of the past were kind of old wounds reopened. Here we go again, typical Ipswich, they're still going to blow it and all that sort of stuff. And the January transfer window played a massive part, didn't it, in that season, with Broadhead and Clark and Luongo and who else did Hurst come in that window as well? So there is still January to come in this season, and it may have a role to play. The point about it being an average division, I would agree with. I'm still waiting for anyone to kind of blow my socks off in terms of someone I've seen up close and personal. I was waiting to see what Coventry are all about. Obviously, we didn't see them anywhere near at their best last week. I thought Stoke looked a decent side, but I look at that top six with Preston and Millwall in there. Can they last the pace? I don't know. They feel like sort of Mick McCarthy type Ipswich teams from a few years back that are kind of quite functional and consistent. But will it be enough to keep them there or get them over the line? I'm not convinced. The issue is, and you don't want to get too far ahead of yourselves, it might not be like this division might not be like this a year. If Ipswich don't do it this season, you're into year two, the final year of parachute payments. The pressure's well and truly on then to get promoted. And you could have Wolves and whoever else dropping down from the Prem. If Southampton and Leicester don't do it this year, they probably, you know, get stronger to go again, and it's a different kettle of fish that next year. So it's all very well us saying, oh, they'll be okay, they'll be fine, they'll finish in the 80 odd points and they'll finish in the playoffs, and but is that enough? Should that be enough given what they've spent and the time they've had to prepare for this as well? They've known really for a long time they were heading to the Championship, and it really, they're sort of chasing their tail a little bit because of the mad late scrambling in the transfer window, which could that have been handled a bit better? Is that going to prove costly over time? They're all the sort of questions that people, you know, are fair to ask, I think.
100% they're fair, and nothing, you know, it's not been perfect, has it? But then nothing in life is.
No.
Apart from, obviously, that season they went up when everything was rosy and they just seemed like to be this relentless winning machine. And that, but that is, the, as I said, that's the outlier. You don't get seasons like that very often. And to then be expecting that again, you know, you're always going to be on hiding to nothing, I think.
And that team went through, Kieran McKenna always talks about this in terms of you have to have shared experiences as a group to get to where he wants them to be. And it's very easy to forget, and I keep saying it, that revered team of that everybody loved had some rocky moments on the way. Some of them took a little while to find their feet. As a team, they had some setbacks along the way. The Charlton 4-4 game with the conceding the goals and various other moments along the way that proved to be, and I know people now always go, oh, here he is talking about learning lessons again and it's boring and we don't want to hear it. But this is a new group now that is learning, you know, learning on the job and going through some experiences. And you can learn so much in a classroom, but nothing like real life teaches you, does it? And you know, we just have to hope that they are going to pick up a few lessons from some of the things that have happened this season and put it into practice in the second half.
On that note, Stu, the one thing they do need to learn pretty quickly is how to win games after falling behind. You mentioned the Jeremy Sarmiento moment. That's the last time they won a game after being behind. That's, what was that, April the 1st, 2024, so a year and a half. And McKenna has made reference to that a few times, hasn't he, in terms of we can work on our reaction to what happens when we go behind. That's your silly question now, but what's your take on that? Do you see kind of players kind of drop their heads and kind of be impacted by going behind more than they should be? Because clearly that's something that has been a great trait of Ipswich Town in again, harking back to that promotion run. You never felt like they were beaten, even if they did go behind. You always thought they could come back and score more goals than the opposition. And you don't get that feeling clearly now, and the stats back that up with this Ipswich Town side.
Yeah. The first thing I'd say is they have scored three last-minute equalisers this season: Birmingham opening day, Derby, Blackburn. So that's not completely gone, and there's been... But definitely a comeback win is something to tick off. They've gone behind in 10 games and they've got 5 points from those. So got five draws and five defeats in those. So if you wanted to put a positive spin on it, in half of the games they've gone behind, they've still managed to get something. The comparison, again, we're going back to the comparison with the promotion season. But I think that it was different then because there was... Ipswich was seen differently then. They were the newly promoted team that were underdogs and maybe underestimated for quite a big chunk of that season. And so when teams went ahead against Ipswich, now it's something to defend against. It's something to protect against Ipswich. And we've seen the difficulties with breaking down a deep block. In that promotion season, teams kept playing quite open, and Ipswich had that mentality of as soon as we go behind, we go back to get a goal. That's a little bit easier when you're playing against sort of more open teams. So probably every time we make this comparison to the promotion season, it is comparing apples and pears a little bit, I would say. I don't know, I've seen a lot of stuff about, does this team care enough? Is there enough passion? Is there enough bite? You know, Leif Davis is talking about, I'd go to war for any of the boys in this dressing room. I think Dara O'Shea is really starting to grow as a leader. Matasira is someone that's, you know, can't be accused of not being up for the fight. Jack Taylor's someone who's smashing into tackles. No, I don't know if I'd go as far as sort of saying this isn't a team that's got enough heart in it at the moment. Well, again, I'll throw it back to you. Do you sense that you're a fighting man? Are you seeing enough passion? Are you seeing enough desire out there? Is that an element of this? What
it's like it's a kind of intangible that's it's hard to measure, isn't it? I would say that, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, isn't it? And therefore, if you're constantly comparing this side to the side that we all love so much, you're on a hiding to nothing. Like I've already said, the only way they can show they've got that heart and they've got that ability is by doing it. And as you say, that's something they have to tick off thus far. Clearly this is a side with much, and again, it might be part of the issue is that this side is packed with players who are on big wages, have been brought in with big money, and expect to start every single game. Whereas the previous side were players, a bunch of underdog players, all pulling towards something that none of them had ever done, which is get to the Premier League, really. And there was so much more defined in their roles as well. Whereas this side, we don't have that, do we? Everyone thinks they should really be starting. So that's another kind of problem that McKenna has to work on and solve. But I will say, if anyone's going to find a way of gelling a team, it's going to be Kieran McKenna. He's done it already. He's with that team that were languishing in League One, and he took them all the way to the Premier League. I'm fairly confident they're going to be all right again under him. But you can't. It's hard to sit here now and say, well, they've got no heart, they've got no desire, because how do you measure that unless they come out and literally say that? Who are we to judge the size of a man's heart, as they say in boxing? But they have to show it. They have to come out and prove they can do it, because that's clearly one of the key signs of a good team. The key traits of a good team is being able to come back and win games that they've gone behind in. But you make a good point, Nestor, with the fact that they have come from behind. They just haven't won games. So it's not as if as soon as they go behind, they just fall apart and get beat 4 or 5 every time. That's not the case. But it is, again, we are at this juncture, which I feel like we've been at a lot of times this season, where you've sort of felt that it's lift off, you know, the Sheffield United game, they're going to be all right now, but, you know, and then again, they take a step backwards with the Middlesbrough game and games after that as well. So
I think we forget in football, the time element of it
as
well. Like Coventry are doing what they've done this season after building with a fairly consistent group over a period of years to get to this point. Ipswich got to that point, as I say, with Kieran McKenna comes in midway for a season, has 6 months, doesn't quite do it, bumps in the road during that League One promotion season. That was 18 months in the making before they then became what they were in the Championship. Mm. We are now effectively, middle of December, 3.5 months post-transfer window. 3.5 months. That's nothing, is it? You know, that's 14 weeks. You think, if you can relate it to starting a new job or moving to a new country or something like that, and what you would be expected to do within sort of 14 weeks, just because the games come thick and fast and the narrative changes so quickly all the time, I do think we forget how little time there has been with a completely new group at the moment. I do think the money side of it, and this is a general football thing now, is, you know, football's in danger of eating itself, isn't it? But with the FIFA World Cup tickets and all of that, but generally the money that washes around in the game, it's easier to love the underdog, isn't it? And it's now Ipswich are the big boys, and this squad cost £130 million and all of that, and pressure and expectation. So every little knockback feels like there's a bigger stick to beat them with, because you should be doing better. And we've not felt that. We've not had that for a very, very long time for those of us associated with Ipswich. So it's a new feeling. It's It's one we're getting used to.
It's also that you mentioned the football generally, Stuart. It feels like every season the discourse and the kind of narrative around every single result gets more and more intense. So they win a game, everything's brilliant and they're going up, and then they lose a game and everything's rubbish and they're, you know, the players are useless and McKenna, you know, needs to sort his ideas out. Look at the Celtic boss, Wilfred Nancy. He's come in, he's lost three games. Already people are saying he should be sacked. It's just, time is not a commodity you get in football anymore, is it? You either win now or you're useless. So again, it all kind of adds up to this kind of debate around every single minutiae of every single game. But clearly that's football, and that's why we love it, because it's fun to talk about and debate and trade opinions. And that's what we've been doing, I think, now for about 25 minutes, Stu. It's been a bit of a group therapy session. Is there anything else you want to mention before we head on and crack on with our Monday?
No, I don't think so. I'm sure a week on the training pitch will do them a bit of good. Not had much sort of training time. Not much rest time for anyone sort of involved with it all, really. So hopefully a little bit of a rest, a reset, and then they can go again for this, gets hectic again for Christmas, doesn't it? So,
of course it does, Christmas crunch. Should we be worried about Saturday, though, Stu? Crisis Club Sheffield Wednesday. They're not going to come and play expansive football, are they? They're going to park the bus. It's going to be the old breaking down the low block issue again.
Possibly, yeah. And there'll be, it's a shame because, having done so much to build that, start to build those bonds with the two home games previously. I don't know how much, because it was, a good travelling contingent at Leicester, 3,000 plus, how much that has kind of done to damage that. But a week off, everyone back at Portman Road, the majority of whom will still have some good memories from Coventry Stoke. Hopefully the atmosphere is good and they can rise to the occasion.
Absolutely. Friends, that's going to bring us to the end of this podcast. We've done 50 minutes, which feels like a nice, tight little review of what happened at the weekend and a general wider bit of group therapy debate. Whichever side of the debate you fall on, let us know. Because as I say, football is a game all about opinions and chat. That's the fun of it. Talking of chat, Carré Live 3, which was meant to be obviously on Saturday, as the boys revealed last week and we shared on social media, that's had to be postponed, which obviously is sad news, not something we wanted to do. But to try and make up for it, we're going to bring you a live pod virtually this Thursday, our Christmas special from 7 o'clock, live across our YouTube and Facebook channels. So join us for that. We're going to be talking, obviously, about the season so far. We're going to be looking ahead to Sheffield Wednesday. We're going to be taking a lot of questions, mailbag questions. So get involved. You can literally ask us questions live and maybe have a little chat about January transfer window as well and what might be needed going into that. So join us on Thursday. And obviously, just to remind support our sponsors, use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk for 20% off all the excellent spirits, alcoholic beverages, lots of stuff to get involved in for Christmas there. And also use the code KOA10 at molecular-uk.com. Just check that. I haven't got that one off the top of my head yet. Yeah, molecular-uk.com for 10% off all their excellent cleaning products for your car and various other bits and bobs. Get your alloys shined up and your interior looking nice and smelling nice for the Christmas travel, which is inevitable at Christmas. You go all over the place, don't you, at Christmas? And also, friends, a reminder of a couple of competitions we've got running at the moment. One, definitely money can't buy competition, and one pretty special competition. The first one is a chance to come and watch a game with us on January the 31st against Preston at home, looking for revenge after that defeat earlier in the season. You can come with us. You'll be in the press room with us beforehand. You can have some media scran. You can appear on game day. You can touch Watson's bolder shoulders, maybe a little rub his head for luck before the game. then sit and watch the game with us in the press box and obviously go to the press conference afterwards with Kieran McKenna and see how it all works. You have to be a subscriber to enter that, but you can sign up now and enter that straight away. We currently have the best offer of the year, which is £6 for 6 months, or £26 to take you all the way through to the end of 2026. So if you're not a subscriber, go and get involved. Clearly, it's very important to us that people who do enjoy what we do sign up, and hopefully you'd agree that that's not too much money for what you get. And the other one, Stu, is one you've been instrumental in sorting, and you're just going to bring it in now. That man is in your head. I've got a blind spot on this, Stu. I've started writing, and I'm convinced I'm going to do this properly at some point. I've started writing Darwin Núñez now. That's in my head.
Don't put that in my head.
Marcelino Nunes, we've got a signed shirt, Stu, which you've got. And not only that, in my opinion, it's the best shirt this season, the third shirt. So, yeah, good to have that on offer to our subscribers as well, Stu.
Yes, it is indeed. Yeah, I'll just give you another look for those subscribers watching on video. There it is. Nunes, 32, signed by the man himself. He's written 32 next to his signature on the 3 of 32 on the back of the third shirt, which has really grown on me. Now I've got one.
It's really
in
nice.
The flesh. It's nice that. So it's up for grabs for one of our lucky subscribers.
Yeah. So again, you can enter that competition online now. Again, you have to be a subscriber, but again, as I say, if you're not already, you can sign up. The other thing to mention is to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We've not had one of those for a little while. It just helps lift us visibility-wise in the charts, helps people find us with the algorithm and all that, and join the army. Stu, we've got to crack on with a week without a game, which feels a bit weird, doesn't it, given how busy they've been recently, building up to Sheffield Wednesday this weekend. Anything else to mention before we go?
No other business, no.
Okay, excellent. Well, friends, as we say, the second part of this week will be live, coming to you at 7 p.m. on Thursday. So join us, please, if you can. If you can't, obviously we'll put it out as a pod anyway, and you'll be able to listen back and watch it back. But the more people we have involved, the better it will be, because we want loads of questions, loads of input from you as we head towards Sheffield Wednesday this weekend and then Christmas. Friends, hope you have a good start to your week, and we'll speak to you on Thursday night.
Think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. Plus. Terms and conditions apply.